Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Readers Entertainment Radio. I am your host, Lisa Watson. I am pleasantly surprised because normally, you know, sometimes when I start the music, there'll be a little bit of a delay, and then I'll be sitting there waiting, and there'll just be dead air, and then I'll start talking, and then the music will start playing. So sometimes I can never quite get the flow of that right, but it kicked right in today, so that's awesome. I hope everyone is having not just a wonderful week so far, but also a really good summer. If you're like me, and you're getting ready to maybe send that first freshman to college, congrats for you. This is a crazy hectic time for me, but you know that just tells me time is really flying by, which means I kind of look forward to the times when I can kind of decompress a little bit. And so tonight I am ready to pull up a chair and relax and chat with my guest. She is a 2016 Maryland Writers Association contest winner with degrees in criminology and social work. In fact, years of clinical practice have helped my guest explore her fascination with how relationships impact motivation, desire, and inhibition. Combined with her passion for words and meaning, writing in her genre of mystery is a dream realized. And in fact, she lives in Maryland, one of my favorite places near Chesapeake Bay, so I will be certainly talking to her about that in a little bit. So it is my pleasure to welcome Wendy San Eckel to the show tonight. Welcome, Wendy.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much. It's just lovely to be here.
Oh, it is such a pleasure having you with me this evening. And like I said, as a native Washingtonian from D.C., it's always nice to get a guest that's from D.C., Maryland, or Virginia, or what they call now the DMV. So for those listeners that may not be familiar with that little moniker. So, Wendy, let's jump right in. Tell listeners a little bit more about you and, you know, when you decided to kind of put your background to work for writing novels.
I wrote my first novel about 15 years ago. I was in private practice. I had a psychotherapy practice and been working in psychiatric hospitals and private practice for about 20 years. And then there was a personal reason for writing my first novel. And, you know, my daughter had a learning disability. And, you know, I was really surprised at what I didn't understand about that, even with my social work background. So I wanted to write a book about it. Yeah. And at first it was going to be nonfiction. And then I was having a lot of trouble. And then I thought, well, what if I just wrote a story about a family who's going through this? And then the words just, you know, flew onto the page.
Out.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my first endeavor, and then I've been writing ever since.
Wendy, did we lose you?
I'm right here.
Oh, okay.
Something
there
happened.
We are.
I don't know what happened. Okay.
I don't know. Like,
I didn't move, I swear.
Maybe it's me. I'm like jiggling phone cords and stuff. I'm like, could be me. It could be a, you know, one of those crazy little shorts or something. But anyway, go ahead.
It could be AT&T. No, I think I finished.
Okay. You write cozy mysteries. So can you tell listeners a little bit more about that genre and what drew you to it?
Absolutely. It's actually pretty interesting. When I wrote the first in the series, I wrote it because I love mysteries. I love solving puzzles. I love just the whole idea of this kind of thing where you don't know what's going to happen and you try and figure it out. And but I wrote it, the only criteria I had was I wanted a strong female protagonist, and I wanted her to be an amateur sleuth, and I wanted it to be set in a very unique setting. And so I wrote this book and, you know, went through the long process of finding an agent, and then he, after a lot of editing and work, found a publisher, and I found a home at Minotaur, and I started working with this wonderful editor, super bright, super lovely. And she started suggesting changes, and that surprised me. And I didn't know what they were. And she said, well, this is a cozy mystery. And I said, well, okay. And she said, well, there's rules for a cozy mystery. And so I had to learn the rules. I had to take out all the swear words. And, you know, there's all kinds of rules, like no sex in the novel. It can happen off scene, but it can't happen in the novel. You know, nothing bloody, nothing gratuitous. And which was fine with me. I actually kind of liked those rules, and it worked out great for the book. But but it was just little things like, you know, deciding on the cover. She said a cozy mystery should tell you what happens inside. It can't just be a color or, you know, whatever. It has to, cozy mystery readers want to know what's going to happen inside by looking at the cover. And just, there were just, you know, all kinds of things. And she knows the genre like nobody's business. And so she taught me a lot about that. And so it was really interesting. I was like, oh, so I wrote a cozy.
Exactly. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm enjoying it. You know, I've gone to conferences and met other cozy writers, and it's been so much fun. But yeah, it all started with me not knowing what I was writing.
Now, Wendy, your latest novel, Death at the Daylily Cafe, is book two in the Rosalie Hart mystery series. And in fact, it's going to be released next week. So can you tell listeners more about this novel and about kind of about the series in a whole?
Sure. It's the Rosalie Hart mystery series, like you said, and she is the protagonist, the amateur sleuth. And Death at the Daylily Cafe is the second in the series. And in the first of the series, Murder at Barclay Meadow, it all starts out when Rosalie's husband makes an announcement that he's been having an affair. They're living in Chevy Chase. Her daughter's just gone off to college. She's making plans for them to go away to wine country and take a hot air balloon ride. And he makes his announcement. And 2 years
kind before, kind of bursting that hot air balloon.
Good one. Yeah, so 2 years before, her Aunt Charlotte had died and left her this farm, very large farm, an old farmhouse on a river on the eastern shore of Maryland. And they sort of neglected it for 2 years. And when she learns of what her husband has done, she escapes there. And the next thing she knows, she finds herself in this small town. And so the first book is all about her trying to get her life back and learn how to adapt to that life. And of course, she finds a dead body floating in the river, which, you know, is how the whole mystery starts. Yeah, the first couple of weeks on the Eastern Shore weren't so good for her. But one of the ways she gets her life back is she starts baking and reignites her love for cooking. And she starts selling the bread in town. And, you know, just the actual process of kneading the bread, it just triggered all the emotions that she had stuffed. And it was her way of reconnecting with who she used to be. And so there's that theme through the whole first novel. And so the second novel starts out with her opening a cafe and the Daylily Cafe. And so the food theme continues. In fact, it's a lot more present in the second one because we have menus and recipes and all kinds of things. So, and when the book starts with her grand opening, and she gets to the cafe and everything's ready and the food smells wonderful, and she makes cinnamon muffins and everyone can smell them and everyone's excited. And just as they're about to open, a dear friend of hers who helps her out in the first book comes to the door and says, I need your help. My sister was just accused of murdering her husband. And so two things. Yeah. So those are the two themes that run through the novel and intercross through the entire book. So she can't say no to her friend because her friend was so kind to her when she first moved to the Eastern Shore. And so that's, those are the two themes. But it's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun writing this book.
Now, you and I were talking actually just a few seconds before the show started, and I was just commenting on just how beautiful your book covers are and how I really like them. And we were talking about Murder at Barclay Meadow, and so we got to talking, and Wendy mentioned the dead body that's actually in the tall grass there, a cover in which I totally just didn't focus on, and she had to, you know, tell me it was on there, and I went back and looked at it. And so, Wendy, tell us a little bit about that dead person in the water, and because she had a little tidbit of information about that, which I really found hilarious and really interesting. So I'll let Wendy tell it.
Well, I agree with you. I think my book covers are beautiful, and I had nothing to do with them. That was all Minotaur. They knocked it out of the park.
Well, kudos to Minotaur.
Exactly. Some talented artist read the books and then made these beautiful covers, just stunning. This, when I got Death at the Daylily Cafe in the mail yesterday, and I was like, it's beautiful. I was so excited. But anyway, on the first one, you know, like I said, with a cozy mystery, you kind of get an idea of what's going on. And when she sent it to me, she said, you know, do you have any changes? And really the only change I had was they had a yellow lab on the cover, and the dog mm-hmm. in the book is a chocolate lab. So we had to fix that.
And don't think your reader won't point
cover.
That out.
Oh, I know, right? They notice these things. But, yeah, I pointed out the hand in the water to you, and then I was telling you the story of how I had a book trailer made of Murder at Barkley Meadow. And I live right now on the Severn River, which is near Annapolis. But I'm returning mm-hmm. to the Eastern Shore in a couple of months. I got a house there. I'm so excited. But anyway, so we were filming the trailer, and I needed someone to float in a river face down. So I asked my neighbor's daughter, who was 19 at the time, if she would please put on a little black dress and float in the Severn River. And so we're sort of in the backwaters of the Severn River, and the water's pretty disgusting. And by golly, my friend offered her boat, and poor Sophia floated in the water face down while we rode around in the boat. Poor thing. I had a giant bottle of hand sanitizer. So when she got on, I'm like, rub this on your face, quick. Don't swallow. So anyway, Sophia was a trooper, and the trailer turned out great. But yeah,
you know, and like you were just saying about your book covers, and that was like one of the things that I kind of learned as process as you kind of go along. But you know, when you become a published author, I was shocked to find that, you know, sometimes authors don't really get any input into their book covers. And so sometimes you don't get a say. It's just, here's your book cover. And when you had mentioned that the art department, actually the person actually read your book, that sometimes mm-hmm. is also not what happens. Sometimes they just kind of give them the gist of it, and they, oh, okay, I got it. Here's your cover. And so it's been, you know, it's really one thing that I see that really stands out with your book covers is the fact that, you know, like you were saying, the person actually read the book and then did the cover. And that doesn't happen a lot, you know, always.
No,
but
it
that's
doesn't.
Really kind of cool. It is like, yay, mm-hmm. they nailed it. They nailed, you know, both of them, like, really good job. Yay, Minotaur.
Exactly. Oh, I know. They are so professional. I'm so lucky to be working with them. It's a beautiful cover.
Now,
but
like
it's
said,
true before. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I know before we signed on with Minotaur, I had had a lot of people tell me, don't get attached to your title and don't get attached to a book cover.
To the book cover, right. Because both
gotta let that go.
The drop of a dime.
Yes, exactly. And both
yeah,
change,
that's
yeah.
funny because a couple of my, I think one of my books, I was just dead set on the name. And then, you know, we kind of went back and forth with the name. And then we ended up using a completely different name, which I didn't really like, and it really had to grow on me. But of course now I love it, but it was just like not my first choice. So mm-hmm. it's like, yes, don't get attached to the book cover or the name. You know,
exactly.
you mentioned your latest novel is centered in the Chesapeake Bay, and I kind of grew up there. My grandparents had a beach house on the bay, and one of my novellas, A Summer of Stars, is actually in the small town of Shadyside, Maryland, which is on Chesapeake Bay. So You know, tell me a little bit more and tell listeners a little bit more about the Daylily Cafe itself and a little bit about the town it's set in. And how are the residents there? Because, I mean, most small towns, you see, the residents are really a hoot.
Oh, absolutely. And that's interesting. I love your title of your novella because when you're on the Chesapeake Bay or the Eastern Shore, there's no light pollution. There are stars everywhere. It's so wonderful. You know, I was just over there last weekend and a thunderstorm came up and it was just incredible watching it. But
Wow.
So the Eastern Shore is a very flat stretch of land between the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic Ocean. And it's unique because there are waterways everywhere. It's almost carved out by rivers and creeks and streams.
Yeah.
And so the culture is, you have people living off the land and the water. There are endless farms, and then you have watermen who they get oysters and crabs and rockfish and all kinds of wonderful seafood. And the towns are very small. They have very good smart growth programs in each county. So you don't have a lot of big, well, there are no big box stores. And so the towns, you know, you might have a Royal Farms, you know, gas station and mini shop.
Right.
But for the
last grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't have any of the big box stores. So they're very small. They're very quaint and intimate. And it's just very unique. And they're very proud. I told a little story in a blog. When I first moved to Maryland, which I wanted to do since I was in the fifth grade, I was living in Ohio in a small town, and we were studying the states and the capitals, and I saw the Maryland state flag, and this is a true story, and I said, I'm going to live there one day. And I got here when I just knew I was going to live in Maryland. I loved the word Maryland. I loved the flag. I thought Lord Baltimore was really cool, you know. So I got here when I was 24, and so I lived on the what they call the Western Shore at first, and on the Western Shore you've got Baltimore, D.C., you know, the big cities, and then there's this huge Bay Bridge that's over 4 miles long. That's terrifying, right?
Yes, it is.
And
I was just on it a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my goodness, I white knuckle that thing every time, but once you get to the other side, you know, everything changes. It's almost like you're breathing
slow. Whole different thing,
It is. It's wonderful. And I don't know if you remember, but when William Donald Schaefer was the governor of Maryland, you know, he had this whole, I think it was in the 80s, this whole reach the beach. And he just wanted to pave over the Eastern Shore so everybody could get to the beach, you know. And boy, that Eastern Shore people were like, no way.
Yep, not happening.
So. Because
I went over it a couple of weeks ago. I was in Cambridge, Maryland, so I had to go to a conference with my sister, and we were staying at the Hyatt right on the water
in
Cambridge.
Oh, that's a great place.
And I don't know how we got any work done because I was just awestruck because it's been so long since, you know, I've gone to the Eastern Shore, and it was just so beautiful and so quaint and just so awesome. I just wanted to, like, pull up a house and stay there forever. But I'm like, I'm going to go home to North Carolina. Don't get me wrong. I love North Carolina, but it's, you know, Maryland, D.C. area, totally, totally in my blood.
Yeah, it's just a very unique place. So it was so much fun to pick it as my setting. I'm having so much fun. There's a wealth of characters to draw from. I mean, there's just so much to offer because it is so unique. And it's also fun, I think, for readers to learn about this place because I don't think many people are aware that it exists. You know, and I even have a little little mention. The bridge wasn't built until the 50s. And so there's this, you know, when you're over there, there's this little funny thing they say. It's like, oh, yeah, she's pre-bridge. And that's because, you know, before the bridge was built, you know, there were just so many people to choose from, you know, so everybody was, you know, everybody knew everybody and everybody was married to everybody. And so they're like, oh, that family boy, they're pre-bridge.
So
it's funny. But it's so great.
Before we get wrapped up anymore, hearing from award-winning author Wendy San Eckel, it's kind of late, but I'd still like listeners to know our live chat session is open. You're welcome to comment or ask questions there. You can give us a call at 646-200-4071 if you have a quick question for Wendy. And, of course, after the live show, you can check out the podcast and recap blog on readersentertainment.com, and the book cover will be the link to the podcast, so you can check out that. And for listeners that want to learn more about Wendy, you can check out her website at www.wendysandeckel, and I'll spell that wendysandeckel.com. So, Wendy, you, like you said, Murder at Barclay Meadow was also traditionally published, was it not?
Yes. Yes. Okay, I had a two-book deal with Minotaur.
So you've been able to kind of see it from both sides, both the self-published route and also the traditional. So did you find that it was a really big, huge difference kind of between the two?
For me, it was. I was very naive when I published my first book, and it was a long time ago. It was right when print on demand first started, and I didn't have to pay. It wasn't, you know, self-published, but it was a publishing company that offered to publish my book, but they didn't do any editing, they didn't do any marketing, and then the quality wasn't very good. In fact, I went to a conference and I was selling books, and the one woman bought one and she came back down and the book had fallen apart in her hands. I mean, they literally, the pages
my goodness,
were falling out. Yeah. So, I mean, there were a lot of things that didn't work for me. And so I vowed after that experience that I was going to hold out until I could find a traditional publisher. And I think the main difference is, number one, the professionalism. And number two, as authors, we often think, you know, we write the first draft and we think we're done and we think it's really good.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Right?
Wake up, y'all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you think it's perfect, just the way it is.
Exactly. Exactly. And so you have to be able to listen to what they're telling you, you know, to find my agent. We edited for a good 6 months before he shopped it around. And then, you know, and I, of course, edited it many, many times before that. Mm-hmm. And then when we found my editor at Minotaur, I cut 11,000 words. And she directed me and pulled this book together. And so I think the main lesson is you get the benefit of these really smart people. And the main thing you have to do as an author is to let your guard down. Listen to them. Mm-hmm. They're really smart. And every time
they're trying to help.
Yeah. And I found that their suggestions, at first I'd be like, oh, really? And then I'd work it into the book and it's so spot on. So the benefit of having that input, it's incomparable to anything else. And so what you end up having such a polished product. And I'm proud of that. You know, I'm proud that I've had to go over it so many times, but, you know, to have these professionals to work with is just such an honor. So it's a very different experience.
Yeah, and I've done both the traditional and the self-published route as well. And luckily, I came on after print on demand, kind of like the after the bridge. But even then, I definitely always stress to aspiring authors or people who are trying to get their first book out. You always. Always get it professionally edited. Your manuscript has to be as polished as it can be. And so definitely spend the money, get that, professional edit, and then get proofreaders and, you know, not just edit as far as your old English teacher, your girlfriend down the street. I mean, professional literary editors who do that sort of thing for a living. And it's just, you are right. There's just such a, you have to kind of let go of the fact that you as the author think everything is perfect the first go around, because it's very rarely perfect the first go around. And, you know, you can, two or three different people can edit the same manuscript and find different things every single time. So that's definitely
something,
if somebody's just starting out, it's like definitely, you know, listen to what your editor is saying and the feedback, and you know, do your homework and try to find that perfect fit for you with the agent and the publishing house, because you know not all of them are the same, and you know it's really important to be able to have a good working relationship with the two.
Absolutely, I'm in a critique group. We've been together for over 10 years, and we meet twice a month. And we read aloud to each other, reading aloud. Yeah, reading aloud. That's
it's
incredible.
A whole different
things you
thing,
catch.
Isn't it?
It is. You catch so many things. Like, I've just used the same word 10 times on the same page, you know. It's like, and they circle it.
Right, because isn't it amazing how your brain just auto-corrects for you? Because it's like you just don't see it until,
you know,
you're right. Like you said, having someone else's eyes on it. It definitely helps. Reading it out loud is so much different than writing it because, you know, you're much more aware of, okay, this is getting to be a kind of long sentence when you're reading it aloud as opposed to when you wrote it. You're like, oh, it's good.
Yeah.
And you're like
I'm
talking
like,
for 5 minutes, no pause or anything.
Yeah, take a breath.
And Wendy,
not be defensive. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
That's true. That is definitely true. You really gotta, you know, put the big girl panties on or big boy pants on and just not be, this is mine. You know, you really gotta get over that real quick and just realize
humility
it.
Is good. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, your novel Murder at Barclay Meadow had some really great reviews. One reader said that while still incorporating all the aspects of a cozy mystery, this book will not disappoint true murder mystery fans. It captivates the reader from the very first page, and while you may come for the story, you stay for the characters. And another wrote that the setting, pace, and characters were so authentic to anyone who lives over here. The story moves along at a nice pace, and you really feel like you know everybody by the end. You have your heroes and villains, but in this well-written book, you really care what happens to the characters. So, Wendy, tell us like one of the things that is really important for you when you're kind of molding and shaping these characters and how they just end up being so memorable.
That's interesting because I think although it's a mystery and I love that and I love the puzzle and solving it and I love my characters and I think that has to do with my social work background that I've always been fascinated with relationships and how they impact us. And I like to take my characters just a little bit deeper. And I think, even in the death at the Daylily Cafe, Rosalie is trying to understand her relationship with her father. And there's a whole theme of fathers and how they impact children. And so I'd like to take it just a little bit deeper because I like to explore those things. And so, I just had a review posted on my fan page on Facebook today, and it was a great review of Daylily. And one of the things the person said is, I love cozy mysteries. I prefer cozy mysteries. This one was a little grittier than most cozy mysteries, but I liked that. It made me think.
Mm-hmm.
It made me understand these characters. So I think that's what I've always tried to do is, you know, stay within the genre, but dig a little, I love cozy mysteries and there are some fabulous writers out there, but I really like to dig deep and make a character complete. You know, they each have their own issues there. You know, everyone, by the time you're in your 40s, everybody's wounded and had a lot of experiences that have formed their characters. And so I give everybody that depth. And so I love that people get that because that's what I love about writing. My characters take over, and it's just so much fun to do.
Now, Wendy, Death at the Daylily Cafe is releasing next week. So can you let listeners know how they can get your book and if there are any upcoming events you want to let them know about?
Sure. You can get it anywhere, independent bookstores, the biggies, online, anywhere. And it comes out July 26th, although apparently you can get it now. And on July 26th, I'll be in Pittsburgh the mystery bookshop there, and then I go to Richmond the next day, and I'll be at the Fountain Bookstore in Richmond, and then the next morning, well, this will be interesting, I have a little TV spot at the local CBS morning show, so I've never done that before, a little cooking segment, so
awesome.
It could go well, or it it could be a nightmare.
It'll be wonderful.
It will be fun. And so I'll be in Williamsburg, Seattle, New Hampshire, at the White Birch Bookstore in North Conway. And there's all kinds of places. And it's all listed on my website. I have a...
Now, Wendy, let listeners know the best way to get a hold of you.
My website. You can message me on my website or my fan page on Facebook. I get a lot of messages there. Lovely, lovely messages. Everyone has been nothing but lovely. I'm having so much fun with this. And my Facebook is facebook.com/WSandEckel. So either way, I would love to hear from you. Yeah.
Well, we've gone a little bit over tonight, but that's totally my fault because, again, I get so crazy, happy, and excited when I speak to somebody who actually either lived where I've been before or is going where I've been before or something. So, Wendy, it was such a pleasure chatting with you this evening, and I would love to definitely have you back whenever you want to come back, and congratulations on Death at the Daylily Cafe. I know it's just going to be a blockbuster.
Thank you, Lisa. I had so much fun with you. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sure. I'd like to let our listeners thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. Don't forget, you can find us at readersentertainment.com. You can check out the recap blog of Wendy's show later this evening. If you'd like, you can leave a comment about tonight's show. We'd love to hear from you. Tune in next Thursday, July 28th, on Readers Entertainment Radio, when our very own Sheila English will be hosting Tom Berger on the show at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I am your host, Lisa Watson, saying thank you for joining me tonight. Be inspired and happy reading. Good night, Wendy.
Good night. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.